Okay, it's recording here on the 2nd of September, and we are going to round up, finish off the job analysis discussion, and that job analysis discussion will lead us into the idea of selection and other various things we need to talk about. So we're finishing up on job analysis. And I had already talked to you about the idea of major and minor responsibilities. Major and minor responsibilities as being the components of a job analysis that demonstrate what the job requires and the minor responsibilities are what the job has to have done to support the completion of those major responsibilities. However, I want you to recognize that while these are the heart of the matter, there's various other things that are associated with the job analysis. And if I was to draw you a picture, please note, coming from a family of artists, see, that represents several pages. Pretty good, huh? You're probably stunned by this rendition. Okay, at the top, we have the job. So this would be a job analysis for some job X. Up here, we have usually a job number, which might be from the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, which is a federal document that has job descriptions of practically every job known to mankind. And then we have sort of factual information, you know, sort of a date of when the job analysis was done, pay range. I'm just sort of filling in stuff here. This might be the foreman or you know, whoever's running it at the time. Over here we might have how I can say this. I'll put here NEXT. Like the next job up from this job, in other words, the output from this job goes where? We'll have something here to explain that. And then, well, let's put here whether or not it's a exempt or non-exempt. Do you know what that means? Do you recognize this, exempt and non-exempt? It doesn't mean anything to anybody? Has to do with overtime. So whether or not you get overtime on this job under the Fair Labor Standards Act requirements for overtime pay. And does this job get overtime or not? And this would be an exempt, which means it's not subject to the idea of overtime, you know, time and a half after 40 hours, blah, blah. Or whether it's whether or not it's exempt, you don't have to pay that. Or non-exempt, it means you do have to pay overtime. To make a long story short, supervisor-type jobs, people who are running the situation, don't get overtime. Traveling salesmen, long-haul truck drivers, et cetera, don't get overtime. So those are people who are working independent, so it's hard to keep track of their time, et cetera. Right here, we're going to have one of the major usefulness things that comes out of the job analysis, and that's the job description. Job description is maybe two or three, four sentences describing this job. So a person who wants a quick view of what this job is would glance at the job description. Also, the second important component that's taken from the job analysis, the job description is being one output of the job analysis. The second output of the job analysis is the job specifications, which is to say things that you have to be able to do or the background that you have to have in order to get this job. High school education, 4 years of college, whatever. Job specification, for example, for your professors here at ASU are almost always PhDs, right? We're all terminally degreed. as they call it. So that would be the specification, one of the specifications for this job. And the job description, well, I'd let you write that. Stand in front of the class, give them good, useful information, and treat them like they're going to use it all and make good use of the stuff you give them. Then this might be the major responsibilities and associated minor responsibilities, etc. So there might be four of these, four or five, whatever, one, two, three, four, whatever, major responsibilities and minor responsibilities. So this is sort of the meat and potatoes, I guess I can say, of a particular job. It's pretty much all right there on that sheet, but there's another sheet or so to go usually. So the job specifications and the job descriptions are the two things that we really need to take out of the job analysis. A brief description, sentences, and then the specifications as to what the incoming employee or the person being promoted has to have in place. Language skills, math skills, et cetera, whatever it might happen to be. On the second sheet here, the back sheet, I probably have safety here, safety issues. I probably have environmental issues that we need to be concerned about, how this job might be detrimental to the environment. That would be listed there. Maybe some discussion about expected changes. Expected change that might happen with this job. Whatever. So this would be the general sort of skeleton of a job analysis that you're going to see or you might be involved in making at your place of business. Quite often, new employees get involved in doing job analysis because it helps them learn the jobs that the company has and their interactivity, you know, with that up and down aspect, what happens after this job kind of thing. And they get to meet people and meet employees and learn what's going on. So the job analysis is crucial to everything that we do in HR. There was some discussion a while back about how job analysis isn't that important, and I want to strongly disagree with that. I would maintain that it's always important. Now, there's going to be other considerations that are sort of hard to quantify, like personal skills, right, that might be put in the job specifications, that they have to have a certain type of personality, detail-oriented, gets along well with others, a strong history of having happy customers or whatever it might happen to be that might fit into this. But in general, the job analysis is information that you gather from seeing, talking to people doing the job, etc. But it's not, there's sometimes shading a little bit. Companies need to keep that in mind if it's important. I mentioned to you before that the number one thing that companies are looking for when they hire is, do you remember what I told you? Problem-solving ability, to be able to solve problems. That's what companies are. Can you solve problems? Or do you call your supervisor up and ask them how to do everything? Hopefully not. So, problem-solving, number one, personal skills, interaction with other people, number two. Number three probably is actual information that you know about this particular job. You know, your skills, accounting skills or management skills or entrepreneurial skills or whatever. But remarkably enough, problem solving, personal skills, getting along with people, motivating people, working with a team, etc., are the things the companies are looking for. My son's applying for a job down in Wilmington. He's an architect. He got his degree in Australia and worked on software packages and designed stuff for the city of Sydney and all kinds of stuff. He's pretty cool, landscape architects. He's applying for a job in Wilmington. And they, he sent him a copy of his portfolio and a bunch of other stuff like that. But what do they want him to do before they hire him? Pardon?
Interview.
He's done the interview. We like you. You're going to be fantastic. But before we actually hire you, we want you to, not the drug test. What?
Cross-check your references.
Pardon?
I check your references.
Oh, they're going to check all the references, but it's more than that. They want him to come in and do the job for 2 days to see how he gets along with other people, see whether he can solve the problems that are inherent in their job. Their job is a landscape company, a landscape architectural company. They design the landscape. They don't actually cut grass or dig dirt. They make the design for new installations, and all their work is in Indonesia someplace, so it's all done by the computer. So the plans will be made up here. They'll be sent over to Indonesia for the company to look at to see whether it's feasible to do and fits the plot okay, blah, blah, whatever. They want him to sit down and see whether they get along with him, interestingly enough. Can he make it all happen, et cetera, which I'm sure he'll do. He's a really fun guy to be with. So I'm just saying the personal aspect of this is really important. On the other hand, at one time, some years back, probably the smartest student I've ever had, 4.0 student, obviously, and he couldn't get a job. Why was that? That's sort of right. He could talk to people, but it's not exactly the way you wanted to be talked to. He was used to being extremely smart, probably the smartest person in the room, and he manifested a kind of aloofness, which didn't work very well in the interview situation. So it is personal skills, but you have to have content behind that smile, right? You have to have problem-solving abilities and know some stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, the job analysis helps put all that together, then your interaction with the person, as long as you're not polluting it with the fact that they like the Eagles just like you do, and you're looking for stuff that's important to the job, getting along with people, you know, working well in groups, et cetera, then you'll be fine. All right, so that's the job analysis, which is going to be, the, as I call it, you can write it down because I'm going to refer to it, the cornerstone of HR. The cornerstone, which means like the foundation, right? It's the basic, one of the basic stones in the building of a new building, the cornerstone. Should I let you know what an SOP I am? I once gave a question, a true-false question on a quiz that said, job analysis is it was a true-false question. Yeah, they didn't think it was funny when I showed it to them. They were pissed. But then I realized everything, everybody had gotten it wrong except one kid out of 40. It's pretty good. But I sort of enjoy doing it, you know? Are you a careful reader? Do you see what I'm talking about? Okay, so I'm just warning you, be a little careful on the test. Read carefully, okay? Or hope that everybody else reads equally inaccurately. But it is the cornerstone of HR. The cornerstone of HR means that it's ultimately important. Need to know what a job is before we hire, train, etc. Everybody sees the R there rather than the N, right? Yes? Yes?
Yeah.
So therefore it was?
False.
Yes. But since they've memorized their notes so carefully, they read over it really quickly and put true. So as they came out, I asked them. They were sort of angry, but then they had. It was kind of funny, sort of. Okay, so read carefully when we get to tests. It's important.
Well,
it's tight. In all honesty, the exams are tight.
Okay,
because
I
was going to say, if I get exempt from the exams, I don't know about this.
But you can see all those letters. It's tight, don't worry. I wouldn't do that to you on an exam. the quizzes are another thing entirely. Okay, so now we have in place the idea that whether we're going to make or buy our employees for this goal out there in the future, whatever that happens to be, we still have to understand what that goal in the future is in terms of jobs required. And here's this goal, and here are some of the jobs that have to be fulfilled, whatever they might happen to be, and we need to take the job analysis and use that job analysis to either select our new employees or train our existing employees so that they have those particular skills and abilities as detailed in the job analysis. Okay, everybody with me? Yes, Dr. Fox? There's some people that are sort of stunned and ready to go to sleep. My friend Steve Taylor at this hour would always get kids up doing jumping jacks halfway through class to keep them awake. I understand the pain having slept through my undergraduate MBA and PhD programs successfully. Okay, so looking at this now, we have this in place. We're going to have to make an analysis of how we're going to find the people that we want. We know we're going to use a relevant labor market based on, if we're going externally, we're going to use a relevant labor market based on the level of the employee that we're looking for, geographic area, right? Yes, Dr. Fox. And we're going to have, as part of our selection process, basically the idea of the job analysis requirements will be part, very much a part of our selection or training processes. All right. Are we all together on this? Yes, Dr. Fox. All right, good. So that's where we stand at this point. What's it all mean, Alfie? What it all means is that in this trajectory here toward our goal out here, right, now, we are able to find people and bring them in for the jobs that will be out here at time two. We should take a look at what we have found out about our current jobs, perhaps our future jobs, in terms of job analysis, made a comparison. Over here we had major responsibilities and minor responsibilities that are exactly the same as these. It's a good fit. We can use all our internal people. We found that there's a big gap between these. The job analysis that we can get for these future jobs, which are available in any many pieces of data, do not fit, right? Here are the major responsibilities, and three of them are not even existent back here with what our employees have. We're obviously going to have to go outside and train the new people coming in. All right. But in any case, what we're moving into is the idea of trying to make or buy the number of people with the appropriate skills. And those are the two things I said we have to look into as we move from time one to time two from a human resources point of view, the number plus the skills that they have. Okay. But in the process of this transition here, which is basically the selection process, well, recruiting and selection process. Before I can talk to you about recruiting and selecting, we have a large, and I don't mean one day, I mean large in terms of probably four class periods at least, to discuss laws that impact you as you make decisions about employees, who to hire, who not to hire. And these are the protective legislation that arose over the period of the 1960s and 70s. These are things that you may think you have an idea about, but in reality you don't have an idea about it. You have gathered information about what companies can and can't do based on editorials in newspapers, based on what friends have said to you, based on people who are not in the system but have opinions about these kinds of things. And particularly the protective legislation that we're going to talk about, and I mentioned to you before, I believe, the protective legislation that we're looking at means that you may not discriminate against people based on what I call protected group status. So we have the idea here of creating protected groups. And that protected groups are not the way you think of it. Protected groups are really protected, could I say traits, maybe. And what we're looking at here is the idea that protected groups should not be discriminated against, and you've already heard a lot of this, race, gender, et cetera, et cetera. But more importantly, I'm going to overall say, in terms of the big picture, you should not discriminate against an employee based on anything except job requirements. That's what you should use to discriminate. Discriminate based on requirements. Right? A person has no particular skill. They've never done this job. They do not have the job requirements. So you would discriminate against them. Discriminate simply means to choose, right? To choose between based on something. And in terms of the word discrimination, it's not necessarily, it hasn't been forever, a pejorative, negative term, right? But now it is, of course. But in your mind, think about the idea that you want to discriminate solely based on their ability to do the job. Not only do you get the best employees that way, but you don't limit the relevant labor market by cutting out all the various groups that you might otherwise want to discriminate against, the protected groups that you might want to discriminate against. So don't take your relevant labor market and cut out bunches of people because they don't happen to fit a particular race, creed, color, national origin, gender, disability, age requirement that you feel they need. I can't encourage you enough to think along these lines. I should be doing it, skip all the rest of the class, but encourage you to think only about what a job requires. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, did they think that women could be policemen? No. They're too frail. They're too nurturing. They're too friendly. Et cetera, et cetera. And so they missed a lot of highly qualified applicants they could have gotten, right, et cetera. For a long period of time, the police departments in, I think it was New Orleans, wanted you to be a certain height to be a police officer, 5'10", I think, figuring that somehow taller police people looked more like they could enforce regulations or whatever. It turned out to be total BS. And frequently overbearing tall people end up getting in fights rather than actually getting the ticket issued and trying to correct a particular behavior that the person who has been stopped needs to stop doing. So the job requirements take precedent instead of the various protected groups, and that's what's important to remember. All right, and I need to go through all of this stuff in some detail as we start into the idea of choosing people for jobs. Okay. Now, most of you understand the sort of general negative aspect of what I call illegal discrimination. But there's a lot of confusion associated with some of these things that I need to straighten out as we go forward with this so that you're knowledgeable. I would say that in general, 9 out of 10 people on the street have no clue as to what I'm now talking about, even though it's an extremely expensive mistake, and even without running afoul of the law, they could easily be running up costs in terms of getting the best person for a job because they decided that they shouldn't hire people who are whatever. Okay, so the two reasons, the legal reason for non-illegal discrimination, legal reasons, of course, and also the reason for better quality employees. You always want better quality employees. And if you're restricting your labor pool by saying, I'm not hiring women, I'm not hiring Hispanics or blacks or whites or whatever it might happen to be, right, you're going to hurt your applicant pool, and that's a big mistake. All right. This ongoing area, aside from the job requirement, the legal aspect of this is ongoing and continues to be a fairly, can I say this, a fairly accurate rendition of what was wanted to be established and what was established back in the 60s. So let's talk about this for a minute. The most important piece of legislation, which has been passed on this line and then modified over the years with some amendments, is the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was promulgated with the idea of making job opportunities available to everybody, which companies, of course, should have been doing in order to get the best people, but weren't. So the Civil Rights Act of 1964 is the idea that protected groups should not play a part in decisions involving what you do in terms of hiring people. But the Civil Rights Act is made up of a number of different titles, titles here. You all know one of them, Title 9, which has to do with
athletics.
And particularly gender, right? Pardon? Well, I can't make a value judgment. I'm just saying this is one of the titles, and this is how it's applied to college sports, but also, or maybe even high school sports, for all I know. Mm-hmm. So we have what? Would you say two? Is that two? Title two? Nine. Whatever. But we also have, so we have sports here in education, and then we have public accommodation, restaurants, hotels. We also have transportation, buses and the line. That's another title. So these are different titles. And we get down to employment, eventually, which is, please note the Roman numeral, which should be used rather than the number 7, right? Use the Roman numeral, Title 7. If you ever do your PhD and you have to write comprehensive exams and you have a very fixed amount of time and you decide to save time by using the number 7 rather than using a V11, don't do that. Your professors will be really upset if you do that. Who's certainly the first to find that out. So, use the correct terminology, Title 7. Title 7, which is the way to go here, which is the foundation of employment law here in the U.S., says, and it's the word discrimination is not used in the act at all, right? It doesn't say don't discriminate. What it says is allocation, I'm boiling it down for you, allocation of company resource cannot be made based on protected group membership. May not be made based on protected group membership. And so naturally, your next question will be, what are the protected groups, Dr. Fox? Well, I'll be glad to tell you the protected groups. The protected groups as laid out then, I'm going to give you the terminology that was used then. We'll make a few modifications. Race, creed, color, national origin, and sex. Race, creed, color, national origin, and sex. Those are the 5 protected groups that were allocated across the population in terms of protective capacity, people being hired, promoted, fired, whatever. Race, Creed, Color, National Origin, Sex. Allow me to change, as I say in class, change sex to gender. And sex can be both a verb, which becomes sexual harassment, and then gender is much less confusing. Gender, we're talking about. Race, Creed, Color, National Origin, and gender. Race is what we are. White, Black, Hispanic, Asian, whatever it might happen to be. Creed is any form of religion, even no religion. So if you have no religion, you're an atheist, right? That is a religious belief upon which you may not be discriminated against, except for a few situations to talk about. Color is within race. You're particularly dark or particularly light African American or Asian or Chinese or whatever happened to me. I guess that would count in Chinese. And typically in China, I found that it's surprising, well, really not surprisingly, the labor that comes out of the countryside to work in Beijing or work in Shanghai, the farmers and peasants that come in, are all very short and are all very dark. That's my opinion. Is that true, you think? Yeah, I thought so. They're small and they're dark, whereas the people who are the elites in China are tall and pale. What can I say? That's the nature of these things. So, what we're looking at here is a tendency across cultures to discriminate based on color, whatever the color might happen to be. And obviously you're going to lose some of the best employees that way, best Africans that way. Color national origin is what your background, familial background. I'm not hiring any Irish people, they drink too much. And people who come from Irish families are going to be heavy drinkers, etc. Your own prejudice about someone's national origin historically, their parents, grandparents, or whatever. And gender, male, female, discussion. And in most cases, a gender discussion relative to a job is irrelevant. It doesn't apply. We have stereotypes of what applies, and there are some exceptions. What were you going to say?
On the gender thing, I heard that companies don't like to hire women simply because of biological factors. At least in childbearing years, but they would be out, and that would cost them money. And
too bad.
Yeah.
Give it a big too bad. It's not a legitimate claim. There was a case that I'm happening to think of right now, because I guess I was thinking about batteries earlier. It was Solon versus Johnson, where they were manufacturing dry cell wet cell batteries, you know, automobile batteries, and they were... the batteries came through like an acid type of, where they introduced acid into the lead plates, and the fumes that were giving off were claimed to be detrimental to women, and that they would breathe this stuff, and then a couple of years later, they would have a deformed child. That was the claim. And so they didn't want women to work this particular job, which was a higher paying job. And so, what do you think? Is that legitimate? Of course not. What should they do? Stop the fumes from polluting people, right? Whatever it happens to be, and then hire based on the people who are qualified for the job, since it paid more, for example. Say we're using gender as a way of selecting people out, claiming that it could cause birth defects, which it probably could have. But the reality is the law doesn't let you do that. In the same way, what happens if the third shift gets off at 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever? Well, they used to have the idea that only men could work the late shift because they'd have to walk out to their cars and a woman would be attacked, sure as you're born, on her way out to the car by some sex-crazed weirdo. All right, so what happens? Is that a legitimate reason for barring women from working that shift? No. They say put up a fence and monitor the area so that everyone can work. Yeah.
So it's basically just the company grasping at straws and why not to hire?
Well, that's what I would tend to think. And try to avoid any kind of problems where they really should put up a fence and monitor or put in a good ventilation system for the batteries or whatever it might happen to be. So that would be my argument. So we have race, creed, color, national origin, then and gender. All of these, of course, have been basis for job discrimination. And I use the term here, as I write it, in the allocation of company resources. And a job is a company resource that's going to be given to somebody. Just like a pay raise, just like a promotion, it's a resource the company controls, and it can't be allocated based on these protected groups. Does everybody follow me? That's a good start, at least, on understanding this. But the idea, then, of a protected group membership is, of course, inclusive of all of us. Do all of you have gender? Do all of you have a race? Keep nodding. Do all of you have a religion? Yes, etc. So we all have protected group status. So we're all in the same boat together. I called up to apply to a school before I took this job all those years ago, back in 1987. I called up a bunch of schools to see if they would consider hiring me. So I called up the University of Washington, Seattle, where my parents live, and my brother too. So I thought it'd be nice to go ahead. I called them up and I said, I saw you had an ad in for the business school, in the management department. Here's the deal. And they said, first off, are you a white male? And I said, yes. He said, we're not hiring you. So right away, they were apparently discriminating based on gender and skin color, race. But why were they doing it? They were doing it because they were already overloaded and under court order to get some minority representation and female representation. Back in those days, there were very, 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 very few women business professors.
Yeah. They just wanted to meet the quota and not actually have...
Not a quota. Don't the word quota is an incorrect use of an affirmative action consideration. What they were doing is, what they should be doing is trying to represent the relevant labor market. Represent the relevant labor market for business management professors. And there were some women, and they should therefore have some women in their management department. Do you see what I mean? So the idea here is to represent the relevant labor market. Whereas the term quota sounds like there's a specific number that you're being held to. Quota certainly doesn't apply to Title VII, and it really doesn't apply to affirmative action either, which I'll go over with you at some point here in the future. All right, so what we have then out of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 is proscription against using these protected groups to make decisions about who gets what for that organization. Okay, of course there are going to be exceptions. The exceptions are all going to be job requirement based. Let's say, for example, the company thinks that you have to be very strong in order to do this job. The job requires lifting railroad rails. Have you ever tried to pick up a railroad rail? You know, you have to move them in order to steal the ties, which is what I was doing at the time when I found out how heavy those damn rails are. They're extremely heavy. And you have to get them both off to get the ties out. It was an abandoned railroad line. I wasn't really doing anything that bad. But they're really heavy. So you might say, well, I'm only going to hire men because they can do the lifting. But you can't do that. What you have to do is do a job equivalent test to see what's required by the job analysis, for example. Does the job analysis say have to be able to lift 1,400-pound rail sections? Maybe, maybe not. But what we're looking at here is a failure to understand that there are a number of women, the occasional Brunhilde and the like, that are stronger than some of us guys. I'll be the first to admit it. And my wife can do a hell of a lot more push-ups than I'll ever be able to do. It's the nature of these things. And so what we have here is the stereotypical belief that women are the, quote, weaker group, when all of you should know that that's not true, particularly in terms of lifespan and in general capacities. All right, so we're getting rid of that. We're looking at the job requirements specified by the job analysis and not saying we're only hiring men because they're the ones that can lift the railroad ties or whatever it might have to be. You have to show that you tested people against the actual ties or against the weights whatever it happens to be, before you made the determination. If they couldn't do it, okay. But there's going to be lots of men that can't lift a railroad tie or a rail, even for that matter. So, yeah. All right, so we look at this then. We can take a look at these things to not consider, right, as we go about looking to fulfill our need for people out there in the future, be it internal hiring or promotion or external hiring. Don't use protected group status. I still have a lot more to talk about, but I'll talk about that on Thursday. That's it for today. Take a hike.